Hi friends, I am back with the chapter number 2, Theories of Learning. In the first chapter, we got an introduction about what is learning and development, some finer points. Now, in this chapter, we are going to be discussing about the various theories behind this whole approach. Theories of learning. Learning as in knowledge plus skills to be developed. So there are a lot of learning theories that have been created by many researchers. We'll be discussing some of them in this particular module. What are the objectives? Understand what is learning. Classify the learned capabilities and understand the various theories of learning. The nature and importance of learning. Why learning? Learning is a basic objective of all training and development activities. As a matter of fact, learning is basic to all human beings in a broader context. Like I was mentioning in the earlier module, the first chapter, that whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, you will have to anyway learn. Whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, you will anyway learn. Circumstances will make you learn. Why? Because there is a change that is happening all the time. Change is the only constant in life. We have heard this cliche term. Change is happening and everything is going to change. What I'm doing today will change, the new format will come. Now, what is learning? Learning means I'm acquiring some knowledge and developing it into a skills and behavior. So when we talk about training and development or learning and development, we are actually focusing on the learning process primarily. Hence, we need to understand how the learning process generates. Learning in this context should not be confused with mere knowledge gathering. It's about change in behavior. The change in behavior is a true learning. You may learn a lot of things, you may acquire degrees, but if that degree is not converted into an action in line with the degree, then that learning is of no use. Learning is defined as a process of acquiring, assimilating, and internalizing cognitive, motor, behavioral inputs for higher effectiveness. Learning is defined as a process of acquiring, assimilating, and internalizing cognitive, motor, and behavioral inputs for higher effectiveness. What is it? It simply means in learning, we try to acquire something, we try to get something from outside us, we absorb it, assimilate. And then we internalize it, which means we convert it into a meaningfulness so that it generates a behavior. How do we do this? Through three processes: cognitive process, which is about the thinking, motor processes, which is about action, and behavioral inputs, which is based on the behavior part of the person. We'll go to the details of this as we come to the that particular section of this chapter. Learning has to lead one to enhance capability, and this is best possible through self-monitored learning. The most ideal learning is the learning that you take A, willingly, B, monitor yourself, and C, you start correcting yourself with your self-monitoring. That's the best form of learning. When you can't do that, or actually you want to do it but you can't do it, then you need what is called as a mentor or a coach, somebody who has to take care of you initially. Suffice it to say, learning has to be always willing. Learning should be willing. Learning should not come out of a pressure. Then the learning doesn't become enhanced. It doesn't stay for too long. It becomes more like a knee-jerk reaction to an event. Okay? Taking it further, our brains, it's plural, not apostrophe S, our brains build and strengthen neural pathways no matter what we learn and what we don't learn. Whatever happens at the end of the day, how do we learn? We learn through the use of our brain. The brain takes inputs. Those inputs are coming through the 5 sensory channels: the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the skin. So it goes inside and it starts, when you start learning, it starts strengthening the neural pathways. What does it mean? It means that suppose I'm taking this particular session. I took this session some 10 years back, 12 years back, 14 years back. I went on taking the session. I went on learning. So it strengthens my neural pathway of how to deliver the session. Since it strengthens my neural pathway, I'm able to deliver it much more easier than what I used to do some maybe 15 years back. So our brains build and strengthen neural pathways no matter what we learn or what we or where we learn. So whatever I learn, wherever I learn, at the end of the day, the neural pathways start getting reinforced. Neural means to do with neurons. Neurons are the basic cells of your brain. So the brain transmits information in the form of wave, in the form of electrical impulses, and these are called the pathways. And no matter what happens, the brain starts building you this way, building up the neural pathway according to the way you're learning. Factors that affect learning include methodology. How you learn is affected by the method of learning, by the instructor who's teaching you, by the environment around you, your previous knowledge and programming that is already there in your brain, the motivation of yours for learning that particular subject or topic, and the purpose. These factors enhance or reduce one's interest in learning and hence need to be properly studied and set. You may not like the methodology, so you may lose interest in learning. You may not like the instructor, so you may lose interest in learning. You may not like the environment. You may not have a proper understanding about it from previous experience and knowledge. So you may stop learning. You may not feel motivated, you may feel purposeless. All these can make the best of the learning not happen to you. You may attend the best of the B schools, the best of the education institution, big brands, but if none of these or some of these are absent in you, then the learning is not total. These factors enhance or reduce one's interest in learning and hence need to be properly studied and set. Learning is a relatively permanent change in a behavior when an input is converted into an action repeatedly. Underline the word repeatedly. I do something today for the first time, and then I again do it tomorrow, and again the third day, and the fourth day, and the fifth day. This is called as mind muscle learning. When I keep doing it again, it becomes a habit. It becomes like, you know, I can do it without any effort. And learning is supposed to bring about a permanent change. Permanent change in terms of what you were before and what you are today after learning. That is supposed to be that. This permanent change, let me add, comes to you only when you convert the learning into a behavior. Otherwise, there is no permanent change. Merely attending a class, merely taking a degree, merely taking a paper qualification does not mean learning. Learning will truly be a learning when you take this paper qualification and the contents of the paper qualification or the learning that has happened that gave you the paper qualification into a behavior and a skill. Learning helps us to progress from a lower level of a skill to a higher level of skills. The purpose of learning is to adapt to higher levels of skills. What is a higher level of skill? Something which you have never done before, you are doing it today because you have learned. Why do you need to do it today? Because the environment demands it. There's a change that has taken place. Learning strengthens the brain by building a new neural pathways, thereby increasing connections for us to learn more. When you learn some new skill which you've never done before, it creates a new way of thinking, new way of doing things. You've never learned swimming and you join swimming. It develops a new neural pathway in your brain. It's not about, you'll not know only about swimming, but you'll also know associated things. What happens when a person drowns? So the neural pathway opens the floodgates of cross-learning. You learn one skill, the other skills which are related with automatically starts opening up because the interest is there after that. Learning can and should be a lifelong process. Learning is not something you do once and you finish it off. You can learn any, so age is not a factor. Time is not a factor, you can keep on learning. So if you look at this slide, it's giving you five human capabilities classification. So when you learn something, you get a capability of doing something. One is verbal information. Second is intellectual skills. Third is motor skills. Fourth is attitudes. And the fifth is cognitive strategies. These are the five human capabilities classified under these five different classifications. Verbal information, intellectual skills, motor skills, attitudes, and cognitive strategies. Verbal information, it addresses what aspect of the learning? I want to learn about car driving, so the verbal information will be what is a car comprised of? A steering wheel, windshield, blah, 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 all those things, the what part of the learning. So I learn what is a car. This type of learning makes the learner reproduce the learning as it is received originally. Okay, the example given is information from Google. Okay, so you get the information and you just take it as it is. Intellectual learning is also known as procedural knowledge. underline the word procedural. The how part of the learning. How does a steering wheel operate? What is the purpose of the windshield? This is the how part of it. So when you're questioning the what, it comes under intellectual learning. In this learning, the capabilities of the learner can be customized to suit the requirements of the situation. When you question a how of something that is happening around you, then you're into intellectual learning. Four components of intellectual skills are there. One is discrimination, second is concepts, third is rules, and fourth is higher order rules. Discrimination, ability to distinguish between different phenomena like sound, shape, color, etc. Okay, I see somebody standing behind the camera, and this somebody standing behind the camera is a man, not a woman. Discrimination. I see something next to this person that is not a table, it's a chair. Discrimination. So when I'm able to distinguish between A and B, that is a part of the intellectual learning, one of the components. Intellectual learning gives you the skill of discriminating between A and B. This is water and this is milk. This is pen, this is pencil, right? Second is concepts, ability to describe various phenomena, describing the features. So intellectual learning tells me that this is a pen, the pen has got these features, it's got a ballpoint, it's got a refill, blah, blah, blah. Concepts part of it. Third is rules, ability to see the logic, order or sequence of the phenomenon. So in intellectual learning, what is the steering wheel doing in a car? The steering wheel has got this particular quality. It is following a certain rule of operating. When I touch the steering wheel, when I start moving it to my left, the car moves to the left. And right means right. So rules, intellectual learning. Why are things going the way they go? When I try to understand, I understand the rules of that particular phenomenon. Higher order rules, combination of multiple rules to form a successful task. I'm talking to you. I'm using my pointer. I'm also reading from the screen. So there are multiple things which I'm doing right now, and I must be available. I must be intellectually learning the fact that when I do them together, then only I can deliver the lecture. Higher order rules. Higher order rules are nothing but integration of number of rules put together. That's a higher order rule. When you're playing, when you're in an orchestra, number of instruments are being played and there's a singer, right? So the higher order rules will say that these people have to be in sync and symphony with each other. They should be in synchronicity with each other. Intellectual learning. Okay. Motor skills, as the name indicates, motor. Motor means something moving. These are the capabilities that necessitate the physical movements of a body parts of a person for learning and performance. They involve coordination of sensory organs and the limbs. I may know about car from the Google, but I have to sit on the car at the wheel to drive the car. Then it becomes a motor skill. In a motor skill, there's a combination of sensory organs, my touch, my feel, my sight, etc., my limbs, other parts of the body also, of something which I have learned. I've learned something intellectually, but now I want to put into practice. Motor skills is what converts a particular knowing, a particular knowledge into action and behavior and skills. Right? Attitudes, very, very tricky and very trivial, very, very tricky and very, very challenging to understand. These are evaluative judgments by individuals on objects, people, events, etc. Each one of us have got an attitude towards things, attitude towards food, attitude towards the weather, attitude towards whatever is going on. We all have our own ways of looking at things. These are evaluative judgments. They are evaluative judgments. I don't like this guy. I don't like this color. I like this this particular food. These are evaluative attitudes. Attitudes are usually unexpressed. They are inside you. Attitudes are fundamentally feelings oriented, combined with beliefs and practices, and fall in the category of favorable or unfavorable. So that attitude, I don't like this person, so I may not go. It's not favorable for me. I like this food, I may go towards that. It's favorable for me. So attitudes create your alignment towards or against something. Attitudes are learned and not innate. You are not born with it. You learn attitudes by your interaction with the world. When you're interacting as a human being, you start realizing this is good for me, this is safe for me, so you may like it. You may realize that this is not safe for me and you may not like it. So attitudes are learned, they're not innate, you're not born with it. Attitudes are not visible unless expressed in behavior. Attitudes are inside you. In my OB, when I teach organization behavior, I talk about how attitudes generate behaviors which are external. When I'm negotiating and talking to you, I'm in a behavior with you. But what is making the behavior happen? Attitude is pushing the behavior to happen. Attitudes are felt. Attitudes can be seen by certain telltale signs, but they can't be expressed. I may have an attitude of, I may not like you. So, but in my behavior, I may be deceptive. I'll start talking to you very nicely. So you may feel that this person likes me, but my attitude may be negative. When is my attitude tested? You'll come to know that I'm negative when I'm put into a pressure. Attitudes are tested when people are put under pressure. Suddenly the real thing comes out. Okay? The fifth one is cognitive strategies. Cognitive strategies are also termed as strategic knowledge. Strategic is long term. Strategic means you're going into the unknown. When the unknowns are more than the knowns, it is strategy. Right? Cognitive strategies play a coordinative role for the effective development and use of other capabilities of the individual. What does it mean? One of the learning capabilities is you learn cognitive strategies. Cognition is to do with your thinking process. Cognition is to do with the way you think and correlate everything around you. You start correlating. There's a glass on the table. There's a box of chocolates there. There is some laptop here. Now all the three are not related at all. But I will have a cognitive map. I create what is known as a cognitive map. These three are representing a training room where there's a training going on, and for the sake of a relaxation or something, I may take a chocolate. Cognitive map of mine. So when you are in a learned capability, one of the things you learn is how to create cognitive strategies so that you are able to manage to achieve your results and also take yourself ahead. It's a common thing. The same three things which are there in front of me, somebody else is looking at it, his cognitive strategy will be different. The same headlines of a newspaper I read and you also read. Both of us will have different interpretations of the total news piece that is given there. So cognitive strategies play a coordinative role for the effective development and use or other capabilities of the individual. If my cognitive role is in line with what I want, then it supports me. If my cognitive strategy is not in line with what I want, then it actually retards me. Cognitive strategies involve creativity in algorithms to find solutions through exploring an unstructured situation. Underline the word unstructured, for which ready-made solutions are unknown. The very fact that you're using the word strategic means that is something unstructured, it is in the unknown. So when I'm in the unknown, I have to use my cognitive intelligence, cognitive map. I go to a new place. First time I'm going there, I don't know anybody. So when I go to the new place, I must be in a position to use my cognitive map and find some similarities. I find somebody who looks like a friend of mine. So I said, hey, this is one guy. It resembles a part of the cognitive map in my mind. Then I see something else which doesn't make sense to me. And I see a few things and I try to make a sense of it. This is what we do when we go to a new place, totally new place. Then what do? Whatever is my existing cognitive map, through that I see a meaningfulness. I try to make a sense of what's going on. So what would I do? This person who resembles my friend, I may go and talk to him first because I'm feeling comfortable. Then from there, I'll take on and try to understand the situation in the new place. Right? Now we come to a particular theory, famous theory called the Bloom's taxonomy. It was in 1950s, a team of educational psychologists led by Benjamin Bloom, very, very, very famous person. He came out with this Bloom's taxonomy. The hierarchy of learning behavior, hierarchy, the way one on the top, then second, then third, the hierarchy of learning behavior are classified in three interrelated and overlapping learning domains. Very famous theory. First, we learn through cognition. Then it goes into affective learning, affective, not effective, A, and then it becomes a psychomotor learning. Cognitive learning is about knowledge. I read something. When I read something, I like it or not like it, that is attitude. And when I like it, my skills are developing in the direction. When I don't like it, my skills say nothing doing. To put it in very simple nutshell. Cognitive, attitude, and then skill. These are three ways it happens. Now, the beauty about it is that sometimes I need not have cognitive, but I like something. So I get into cognitive. I try to know more about it. I like a look of a drink in a showroom, in a restaurant. I like the drink color, attitude. I like it. So I go there and know, what is this drink all about? I ask. So that person says, that restaurant owner tells me, this is this. He gives me knowledge about the drink. Then I go and drink. This is how the interrelation takes place. It is not that knowledge comes first, attitude comes next, and skills come later. Not necessary. You may have a skill. You may simply start riding a motorbike without even knowing what are the moving parts. When you ride the motorbike, you say, wow, this is amazing, beautiful. And then you go along and try to know deeper about it. What is a motorbike comprising? And then you come to know the various parts of the motorbike. It's a, that's a knowledge part of it. So all the three are there in us, and all the three combined together is this particular Bloom's taxonomy. Three parts he has talked about: cognitive, affective, and psychomotor. Learning behaviors. What I've explained is already given now in bullet points. Cognitive domain. Learning is exhibited by the person's intellectual abilities. Cognitive learning behaviors are characterized by observable and unobservable skills, such as comprehending information, organizing idea, and evaluating information and action. My cognitive learning behavior will be known to you by the way I read a newspaper and I discuss it with you. That is external, observable. I said, this is not like this. This should be happening like that. I argue. We start discussing something. Observable. Unobservable means I'm making mental note of it and keeping it as an idea and evaluating it. Right? So in short, it is about intellectually the way your brain is going to be functioning. The table below, there's a table given in the next slide, depicts six hierarchy levels starting from simple to the most difficult progression. It simply means that the learner who is able to perform at higher levels of taxonomy demonstrates a more complex level of cognitive thinking. I'll repeat. It simply means that the learner who is able to perform at higher levels of taxonomy demonstrates a more complex level of cognitive learning. What is meant by complex? An elementary learning is ABCD, alphabets. The next learning is words, water, pencil, pen, mobile, pointer, etc. Then comes sentences. After sentences comes paragraphs. After paragraphs comes chapter. So the chapter becomes a complex form of letters, just to give you an analogy, right? Now, what are they? Let's understand this. Simple learning is at the bottom and the difficult learning is at the top. Okay, simple learning is knowledge. If you go bottom up on the first, second column, degrees of cognitive domain. I have a knowledge about it, but it's still not gone into cognition. Then it becomes comprehension. I try to understand it. Then I put into application. Then I analyze. And then I synthesize. I said, okay, if it is happening this way, can I put this and this and get something? And then finally, I evaluate. These are the six steps. The rest of it is given on the right hand side. The examples are given. So what is it? A recall of a data, understanding information, applying knowledge to a new situation. Okay, separates information into parts for better understanding. In synthesis, I build a pattern from diverse elements, and in evaluation, I judge the value of the information. These are the six stages in which goes. The most elementary, the simplest one is at the knowledge level, and the most difficult or the most comprehensive one is in the evaluation level. Now we come to the affective domain. The affective learning domain addresses the learner's emotions. Underline the word emotions. It's a learner's emotions towards learning experience. Do I like it? Am I feeling happy with it? Or am I not liking it? The learner's attitudes, interests, attention, awareness, and values are demonstrated by affective behaviors. It's a human side of the learning. In a class of say 20, 30 students, you may find that some people are having this affective learning, which is very, they don't feel good about the classroom or the lecture going on. Some others are feeling good about it. Now, it is not about right and wrong. It's about the way you respond to a particular external situation, like a learner, like a classroom. These emotional behaviors are arranged in five categories, like the steps of a ladder, with the most elementary behavior at the bottom and the most advanced at the top, right? So, the simplest one is receiving a phenomenon, responding to the phenomenon, valuing, organizing the phenomenon, and finally internalizing the value. Okay? Receiving a phenomenon means I see something, I see a glass of some drink, receiving the phenomenon, I'm receiving it. I'm responding to the phenomenon. And then what am I doing? I'm valuing it, I'm evaluating it. Is it okay for me? It all happens in a very fraction of a second. And then I organize the data, then I say, no, I think this is not meant for me. And then finally, I internalize, I say, no, this drink I'll not take. I internalize the value, simple. The examples are given on the right hand side, last column, examples. And awareness, willingness to listen. Talking, taking an active part in learning and participating, which is a response to the phenomenon. Valuing is the value a person attaches to something. Organizing values into an order or of priority. And finally, internalizing value behavior, which is controlled by a value system. Now we go to the psychological domain. The psychomotor domain refers to the basic motor skills, coordination, and the physical movements of the human being. Once those, the first two have said, this is something that just happens. This domain was actually developed by Simpson to support Bloom's domain, another researcher by name Simpson. The hierarchy of psychomotor domain is depicted below in the table as six categories. Let's see what they are. The first one is, if you go from bottom up, perception, and the perception is followed by response, okay, guided response, then it's followed by the mechanism, complex, over response, adaptation, and finally what we call it as a origination, right? What are these? The perception is point of view. I've already got an attitude, I've got a point of view. This gets guided into response set, and it converts itself into a mechanism, a way of doing it, certain steps of doing it. And it gives you complex overt means open response, which is visible and seen. And then we adapt to that particular thing, and finally we come to the origination of the whole thing, right? Now these examples are given on the right hand side. The ability to use sensory cues or hints to guide physical activity. The second is the early stage of learning, a complex skill which includes imitation, a learner's readiness to act. The third one is the ability to perform a complex motor skill. The intermediate stage of learning, a complex skill. The next one is in adaptation, a learner's ability to mostly to modify motor skills to fit a new situation. And finally, the learner's ability to create new movement pattern. Let me take an example. Some of us know driving, right? You and your brother, you and your sister, maybe both of you have learned driving. The driving inputs are the same. We all know there's a car, there's a steering wheel, there's a accelerator, there's a brake, etc. So you sit there, and first the instructor, the driving instructor, will teach you in a copybook fashion. He'll you hold your hands this way, then do this, everything he'll tell you, right? So you do it that way. Gradually you develop your own style. I'm using a word, you have your own style. You may be adapting your body into your own original way of driving the car, and you'll do it successfully. Your sister or brother who's also learned driving with you, same time, same inputs, may adopt a different type of a motor skills, because the adaptation is unique to each of us. Given the same motorbike, given the same car, three of us will have different adaptive skills as per this. Take the case of your own laptop and desktop in which you're working. Each of us have got different ways of using the keyboard. Is it a fact or not? We use it the way we are adapted. We are comfortable. There are various examples you can take wherein you know that. So don't ever feel that there is something like a SOP, standard operating practice. No. Each one aligns himself to a certain comfort level and adapts to a motor skill. Suffice it to say this. Psychological domain. These physical behaviors are learned through repetitive practice. A learner's ability to perform these skills is based on the precision, speed, distance, and technique. How well he is able to coordinate all these things is an important part of the learning ability in this case. Now I come to the second learning theory in this book, in this chapter. Again, a famous learning theory which has been used in many, many scenarios. David Kolb's learning style model, experiential learning theory. Kolb's cycle, also we call it, there are different names given there, experiential learning, etc. David Kolb learning styles model published his learning styles model in 1984, giving rise to Kolb's experiential learning theory and Kolb's learning styles inventory, LSI. Kolb's learning style formed the basis in understanding and explaining human learning behavior. It's a very simple and a very easy to understand theory. Kolb explains that different people naturally prefer a certain single different learning style influenced by various factors. I'll repeat. Kolb explains that different people naturally prefer a certain single different style, learning style influenced by various factors. Somebody may be wanting to learn only by experience. They say, no, I'll go and drive a car. That's his way in which he wants to learn. Somebody else will say, nothing doing. I want to go through the theory of the car. I want to know what exactly is in the car. That makes him meaningful. For the first fellow, the meaningfulness is action. A third person will say, nothing doing. I'll learn first about one part. I'll use that part. I'll see the part. Then I'll do it. So different people for the same phenomenon will have different ways of learning with they are comfortable.